yet another sign of what 2020 has been all about. Not that we needed any more signs in the pandemic and everything else. Just right before going on here, I see a crawl come across the bottom of the screen on one of the sports networks, because we have several running in here when Bucky Gobble doesn't have Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman on the tube. So we get in here, we switch them all. And so you got ESPN, you got Fox running, we got Longhorn Network running. We got these networks running, and on the crawl across the bottom of the screen on one of them were the words, "All virus tests come back negative for Monday night game." And we're all excited about that because there's Monday night football and everything's clear and clean and ready to go. Hey, 2020, right? Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM, 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and in hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Thanks so much for joining us. Hope your weekend was a good one. I know it had to be different, obviously. Things have been quite a bit different with no Longhorn football game. Of course, it was a scheduled, and that's the important thing, scheduled open date week for Texas. And the plan is to play this week, and we've had good news coming out of Waco and that the Bears were able to go back to practice. So the plan is to have a football game this Saturday afternoon at Royal Texas Memorial Stadium, a 2:30 kickoff. That's the plan. And our game day coverage will begin at 10:30 Saturday morning here on the Horn, the kickoff at 2:30. So that is still in play, and we'll hear more about that coming up from the head coach of the Longhorns, Tom Herman, coming up his weekly Monday news conference, which you'll hear on the Horn. So that's coming your way at noon. And so you'll hear that coming up, talking about getting ready, coming out of the bye week, the open date, and preparing for the matchup with the Baylor Bears. I mentioned I'm Craig Way. Jeff Howe will be along momentarily. They're putting the finishing touches on the Blitz podcast, which you'll be able to hear tomorrow night on the Horn. So they're just finishing up. I'm looking there and I'm seeing the animated gyrations of Rod Babers in the production studio, along with Jeff Howe and Matt Butler. So Jeff will be alongside momentarily. Snoop Daniel is our producer, as always, our man behind the glass, coming off a busy football weekend that included Thursday and Friday from the high school variety. And then from there, how did your weekend pass?
Well, it was a lot of points scored, so that meant I was really busy editing recap highlights this weekend.
True. No doubt about that. And we do have our Whataburger Top 5 coming up a little later on this half hour, where we have our top five performances of the weekend. In fact, here's the order of things that we're going to bring you today. We'll have our Whataburger Top 5 coming up a little bit later this half hour, followed by our conversation with our man who really covers everything so very, very carefully, thoroughly, and you might say somebody who is on top of the recruiting scene. That's Mike Roach, the recruiting editor for Orange 24/7. He'll join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. We will have our inconceivable moment. We do have we have a shark update for you on our inconceivable moments. We have that. Then when we just get past the top of the hour, we'll have our weekly Monday high school football conversation with Greg Tepper, managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. He'll join us to look back at the weekend where a lot of the state-ranked teams held their own. Also, you had a mild surprise or two, but we'll talk about, again, how the ongoing efforts are there to try to stem the tide with the things that are going on with the COVID-19 coronavirus and how it's affected games up the Metroplex. And we know it's affected games now. Over these past few weeks, it's really started to affect the games here in the greater Austin and Central Texas area. What with Westwood and Stony Point having to step back from it, from being able to play. Now comes word, we find out yesterday, that Westlake is going to have to push back its game with Bowie to November 13th. But again, this was something that the coaches have said they had a plan in place in case this were to come up. So two bye weeks in place in play in both 25-6A and 26-6A. So the Westlake Bowie game, which would have been this week, instead is getting pushed back to November 13th. That's as a result of that. So wanting to make sure that they have everything cleared out and healthy and all that on the Westlake campus. So we'll visit with Todd Dodge about that coming up on Wednesday. So we've already seen some of that. We saw a weekend in the National Football League, some impressive stories authored. The Pittsburgh Steelers continue to look very good. They kind of humbled the Cleveland. Did you go with the Cleveland Browns again?
I did. Only because they were red hot.
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know why? Because of how the Eagles played against Pittsburgh the week before. I'm like, the Browns have to be better than the Eagles.
Yeah, but that game was on the road, okay. Now, you said the Browns are red hot. What's hotter than undefeated? The Steelers were unbeaten, and you went with the Browns.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, Snoop, that game was not even competitive.
No, it wasn't.
I watched a lot of that game. That didn't go. How did the rest of the weekend, as Jeff settles in here, so how the rest of the weekend go for you guys with regard to your Supreme London picking?
I had to double check. But the Cleveland game was so bad, I wanted to. Remember how when the Cowboys were getting beat by Atlanta, and I was like, they can still win. I wanted to text y'all a positive text, but it was really awful.
Yeah.
That first half.
Is it awful, Jeff Howe, who joined just now?
Let me start by, let me address two things here. Supreme Lending Pick'em Contest, yeah. I said on this show on Friday, Snoop will vouch for me on this, I struggled with that Auburn-South Carolina game.
I did pick
Alabama over Georgia. I struggled with that Auburn-South Carolina game. I said, you know what, man? Auburn's offense isn't very good. Will Muschamp is our spirit animal in Longhorn Blitz. I really want to go South Carolina.
And you couldn't bring yourself to do it.
Couldn't bring myself to do it. I should have gone with my gut and gone South Carolina, but I went with Auburn, so we got burned. Second thing, I want to apologize if you were a fan of the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Oh, look at you. Look at you.
Because I was wrong about your program. I did not think at this point in October, Craig, Arkansas would have as many wins as Texas.
How about that?
And here we are. Arkansas has won two SEC games. Give Sam Pittman.
I was going to say, who knew from Sam Pittman, right?
Make Sam Pittman SEC Coach of the Year right now. I don't care what happens the rest of the way. The fact that Arkansas won two games against that schedule, considering how bad they've looked the last few years.
And really should have beaten Auburn. I mean, kind of victimized on a call.
And hung in with Georgia.
Yep.
I mean, Arkansas could very well be an impressive 3-1 right now. But I think this goes into Texas football talk, given where the Texas program is right now.
Okay.
Sam Pittman is showing you how important it is to right off the bat when you take a job. And again, it's early. We only got a 4-game sample.
Right.
To get your coordinator hires right. Because the Kendall Briles hire was controversial for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody had a problem with the Barry Odom hire, hiring him to be your defensive coordinator. Barry Odom is a defensive coordinator, one of the best in the country. And you look at Arkansas, Craig, they're physical. They're playing good defense. What'd they pick off Matt Corral, six times in that Ole Miss game?
Yeah.
And offensively, with getting Felipe Franks as a grad transfer, they're competent offensively. So, Razorback fans, I apologize. I was wrong about your program.
Do we still have the promo where Jeff says, what is it? Pray for 2-8.
Pray for 2-8. Plan for hope for 1-9. Plan for 0-10. Well, your prayers have been answered, Razorback fans. You're at least going to go 2-8. And that's to me, the fact that Arkansas is 2-8. And, you know, they can still maybe win a game or two. They still
have. It'd be interesting their matchup now with Texas A&M.
Yeah. That one is in College Station?
I think so. I think it is.
So I haven't looked at Arkansas' schedule the rest of the way, but man, it wouldn't surprise me if they got one more. And for them to at least get two out of playing a 10-game conference schedule, just how dismal that program has looked the last few years. If you're a Razorback fan, I think you've got to be real, real happy with the way things are going.
True enough. But the Supreme London picking for you when?
I was one and one on the college front. Okay. Snoop, I'm going to go ahead and guess, Snoop, you're not going to ride the Browns anymore. You're done right now.
Nah, fam.
But Snoop, here's the other thing though, Craig, and this takes us into tonight, depending on how we finish the week. Snoop has been on a heater, not just going with the Cleveland Browns up until yesterday. He's been on a heater picking against the Dallas Football Cowboys.
That's true. Did he do so again this week? Well, yeah, that was probably rather easy, I would imagine, for you to pick against the Cowboys this week to go with Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals, even though, you know, and they look good against the Jets, but prior to that, they had stumbled a little bit. But then again, and
I think Arkansas would look good against Texas.
I'm telling
would
you,
look good against
I watched
the Jets
some
right
of
now.
That when it was in the downtime before it got to baseball, and while the Green Bay was taking its thumping from Tampa Bay, and that game was not interesting. So my iPad with my Sunday Ticket app, I pull up and I'm watching the Jets and Dolphins, and I'm like, why am I even watching this? Other than to see Frank Gore have as a reserve running back on my, you know, that you know, going to get more carries with Le'Veon Bell gone, is he going to get it? No, they're awful. So saw Brandon Jones make a nice play.
I'm trying to pull it up right now. I want to find the year Brandon Jones was born. Okay, Brandon Jones was born in 1998. So
okay.
Brandon Jones would have been 5 or 6 years old when Frank Gore was an NFL rookie.
How about that?
And he got a TFL on Frank Gore yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Snoop. That's how long Frank Gore's been in the league for a long time. It just keeps chugging along.
Yeah. Man. So that was not good. That was bad. Speaking of not good, I did text.
I'm sorry, that's bad math on my part. Brandon Jones, I think, would have been 7 or 8.
Yeah. I did text.
That Florence High School education showing up this morning.
Speaking of which, I texted Jeff and Snoop on Friday or Saturday to say, hey, you know, Franklin did not cover, as the computer said, Franklin was 61 points better than Florence. And I said, they didn't cover. They won 63-6, so they won by 57.
I'm guaranteeing you, Craig, somebody in, you know, the northwest portion of Williamson County, if you're kind of in that Williamson County, you know, the kind of the southwest portion of Bell County, maybe even into Burnett County, there's going to be somebody in that part of Central Texas that's either really, really happy or really, really upset.
Really?
I'm telling you, Craig.
There are people actually
people are looking at Jerry Forrest Report or the Padilla poll or whatever.
Yeah. And they're wagering cash on that kind of thing.
Hey, if I wouldn't be talking about it if I hadn't seen it happen firsthand before.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, so there was that that happened on Friday, and I mentioned before you popped in about Westlake's COVID situation. So the game with Bowie is pushed back to November 13th to let folks know. Nice win for Bowie when they really needed it. Their win over Del Valle was very, very important for the Bulldogs. Obviously, we'll visit with Jeff Abels on Friday about that. So those are the football topics that were laid on the table, and then there's the baseball. There's the baseball. The Astros, I give them credit for a valiant effort to come back, only the second team in baseball history to extend a best-of-seven series to a seventh game after being down 3-0. The one other time, the Red Sox completed the comeback when they came back. The Astros unable to do that. They ran into a red-hot Charlie Morton.
Charlie F. and Morton was dealing Saturday, Craig. He was freaking dealing. And, you know, obviously as an Astros fan, I would have liked to have seen them push through and get to the World Series. But just the fact that they got to Game 7 of the ALCS with everything that happened this year, I feel okay about it. Not great, but you feel okay about it. The big disappointment for me with that game and Game 7 last night, both of my World Series picks got Game 7'd.
Yeah, you're right. They both went to Game 7 and got Game 7. I'll go to the National League in a minute, but let me get your thoughts now. With the Astros, now, who's leaving? Who will be gone? Which of these guys who are eligible for free agency will not be retained
by
Astros management?
It's been a foregone conclusion that Josh Reddick has played his final game as an Astro.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to think Michael Brantley will probably be gone.
Wow. See, and I thought he was such the glue in the postseason.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to re-sign all these guys.
I know. Springer?
I think the choice could be between Springer and Brantley. I tend to think they'll do whatever they can to bring George Springer back.
Okay.
And at least keep that core of Springer, Altuve, Bregman, Correa together.
From the pitching side, is there somebody?
No, but you've got the Verlander situation.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Where you're going to pay him, what, $20, $27, $28 million to not pitch next year?
Yeah, that's
And
important.
Justin Verlander, honestly, Craig, that's another guy who's probably played his last game in a Houston Astros uniform.
Because you think, you know, obviously he won't wouldn't be suiting up next year, and then moving on beyond that. So that's where the Astros are. And then you get to the National League, like you said, it was Game 7, and it had all that drama and pathos of a Game 7. And this was extended to 7 because of what the Dodgers were able to do in Games 5 and 6. And I will go on record as saying this. Look, Corey Seager deserved the MVP. It was tremendous with what he did. 5 home runs, most for an NLCS. Drove in 11 runs, most for an NLCS. He provided a lot of offensive spark for them. But it never gets to Game 7. It never gets to Game 6 without Mookie Betts with what he did. And I'm not talking about the wall-scraping catches. I'm talking about the shoe-top catch in Game 5 when the Braves have runners at second and third with one out. And there's that shot off the bat, and it comes sinking in. A, if he just fields it cleanly on one hop, it scores 2 runs, and the Braves are up 4-0 at that point in the fourth inning, I guess it is, or fifth inning. They're up 4-0. I don't think LA recovers from that at that point. Betts makes the shoe top catch, and then he had the first of what would be 2 egregious base running decisions made by the Braves over the course of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and that was Marcell Ozuna not tagging, leaving early. And I knew when Betts' throw came in and almost got him, I thought he must have left early because Ozuna isn't a speed merchant. They would have had him, and sure enough, you could tell it was obvious. That changed that game. And then the Dodgers turned around and Seager had big hit Will Smith off of Will Smith. Baseball history there, a 3-run homer, first time a Will Smith has faced a Will Smith, first time 2 guys with the same name, pitcher and hitter, have faced off in the World Series. So he hits that out. Then they get to Game 6. Dodgers get the 3 early, but they stagnate again, as they are wont to do sometimes offensively, and it takes Betts making the great catch up against the wall to keep the momentum going. And then last night, again, they're down at that point, and Betts goes back and makes that incredible, you know, wall. And that one would have been a home run. The other one on Saturday would have bounced off the wall. But like he said last night, post-game interview, they asked him which of the 3 were his favorite. He said the last one because it was a home run robber.
Yeah, and then I love watching Game 7s as just an impartial observer.
Sure.
Because I have no emotional investment whatsoever.
Meanwhile, I'm dying a million deaths.
Yeah, and don't think, folks, I didn't poke the bear last night when the Dodgers were down and the Rams were down and fired off a text to Craig. Like, hey, Dodgers and Rams are both down.
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's all the text from Craig said, yes.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew what the temperature in his living room was at that point. But my favorite moment of that game, the Betts catches were great.
Yeah.
When you hit a home run with the clout Cody Bellinger did, you deserve any kind of middle finger of a bat flip or whatever you want to do at that point.
He got a chance. Well, and some of it also, the way the Braves had acted, the selfie thing rounding third. Boy, Greg Swindell did not like that at all. If you saw him on Twitter about that, he thought that was silly when they were taking the selfies rounding third on home runs. Stuff like that.
If you were calling the Bellinger home run, Craig, would that have been the very definition of prodigious clout?
It was. It definitely. He bombed that. And by the way, it was good to hear Joe Davis have that call last night. For folks who don't know, Joe is the number 2 baseball guy on Fox. Has been. Did the other divisional series. And because Joe Buck selected working Green Bay, Tampa Bay over Game 7 and got that stink bomb of a game in Tampa yesterday, because he picked that game to do that game instead of Game 7 of an LCS. Okay, that's fine. Joe Davis got the call. For those who don't know, Joe Davis's regular gig during the year, he does the Dodger games on TV. But I thought he played it really well down the stretch, evenly down the middle. And you have John Smoltz, a lifetime Brave, as his analyst. So it was just like when Shea Walker and I were doing the high school state championship games. There were Aggies who would complain to John Heike, who's a loyal Texas A&M guy, and say, why you got that damn T-SIP doing the high school championships? Don't you know that's a recruiting advantage? Like, and I'd laugh every time I hear that.
A recruiting advantage?
Yeah, for Texas, because I was doing the state championship.
Because you're in a press box nowhere near the field. Sometimes the jokes write themselves.
Yeah, and then John, loyal Aggie that he is, his response was always, I got a loyal Aggie as his analyst.
I got Shea Walker, who played before that, Bucky Richardson.
Yeah.
So there was balancing the ticket, you might say. And that's what they did last night. I thought Joe called it very well the whole game down the street. Got real excited on the Braves on the home run by Dansby Swanson.
Yeah.
Got really elevated on that. And then he did, obviously, on the Bellinger because of the drama. Cody Bellinger, the only man in National League history to hit two Game 7 home runs. Did so against the Brewers 2 years ago.
You mentioned Joe Davis. I was wondering when the thumb incident happened this summer, I was wondering if somebody at Fox is going to benefit from that because we're going to hit football season where
yep.
Joe Buck is going to do a football game and somebody's going to have to call a really important baseball playoff game.
Yeah,
who is going to benefit? And it's Joe Davis benefiting from Tom Brenneman no longer being in that position.
That's true. And Joe, by the way, also is like their number two. Or number three, I guess, college football guy on Fox. He does games on Saturday on Fox.
He should be number two because the Tim Brando technically
yeah,
their number
yeah,
two.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So there you are. All right. So that sets the table for those things. Coming up, we'll have a Whataburger Top 5. We'll get to Mike Roach, talk recruiting as well. Inconceivable. Greg Tepper of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine next hour. All that and more when we continue with Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Penner Chevrolet knows how stressful buying a new vehicle can be.
This is Light the Tower on Horn. Snoop, are you playing Fly Like an Eagle because of North Texas went on Saturday at Middle Tennessee State? Is that why you're doing
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sure.
Rally back and won 52-35 in that one. Okay.
I love Eagles. You know, DeSoto Eagle.
Mean Green Eagle. Yeah, that's true. DeSoto Eagles. That's right. Who beat up on Trinity Christian Cedar Hill because they had their game called off that they were going to play. So, yeah.
You know, going to DeSoto High School, my parents wanted me to go to a Christian school because we lived in the hood, Craig. We lived like around the state fair.
Yeah.
They did not want me to go to public schools in that area. So we live with my big mama, rent free, and they pay for us to go to Christian schools. But I always wanted to go to Trinity, but for some reason, she wouldn't let me go.
She went on board with
that. Was the cooler Christian school.
Okay. That's it. I think it's DeSoto Cedar Hill week this week.
Really?
Yeah. Huge game. That Cedar Hill beat Aledo, that was a cobbled together, made for matchup between two schools that had had games postponed. So, and that was a very entertaining game. And Cedar Hill won at Aledo, beat them 27-17 on Friday night. Speaking of high school football, it is time for a Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 performances of the weekend.
These are team performances, which are quite often highlighted by what individuals do, but it's more a statement about the team. And there were two teams that tied for the number 5 spot for different reasons. One, Crockett getting its first win, a 59-7 win over Navarro Early College. So, nice job there for the Cougars in getting the victory.
Joshua Early with two rushing touchdowns.
There you go. Now, the team they're tied with, how about a tip of the cap to the Smithville Tigers? Beat Gonzales on Friday, 43-15. They go to 3-4, and they're 1-1 in district play. So that was an important win for Cyril Atkins Ball Club. All right, number 4. Now, the rest of this, believe it or not, 4-3-2-1. Now, listen carefully to this. 4-3-2-1 are all performances by Leander ISD teams, and none of them are Cedar Park. None of them.
How dare you?
Cedar Park has already proven itself to be the best team in the Leander ISD, and they blitzed Hendrickson on Friday. Number 4, Glenn. Grizzlies getting the win, and emphatically so, at Bastrop, 30-6. Nice road win there. Number 3, how about Joshua Mann and the Rouse Raiders? Continuing to look impressive. He beat Connolly 49-20. Number 2, it was the game of the week that we thought, the matchup. But Vandegrift took no prisoners at all in beating Vista Ridge 40-14. Those Vista Ridge 14 points, by the way, one's on a defensive touchdown. One came against the second unit for Vandegrift's defense.
Jay White, number 47 with a pick 6.
Yeah.
And then, a Hegvet real late. It was 2 minutes left.
Yeah, exactly. How about Ryan Back? You know, I like the quote from Drew Sanders, the head coach. We'll get him to repeat it on Thursday. He said, "We're still here. We're still here." It still has to go through them. And the number one performance of the weekend, let's hear it for the Leander Lions, who snapped a 22-game losing streak by winning a shootout over Pflugerville 48-47. Jeff Howe, I'm sure you'll remember another Leander 48, Pflugerville 47 final score.
Was that the Blake Gideon game?
2007.
Yeah.
We televised that live on Fox that year because of the NBA lockout. We were doing Thursday night games, and I had to talk the aforementioned John Heike and the Fox people. I said, this is going to be a good game. Had to talk him into it. We did. Incredible game. 48-47. Well, they win 48-47 the other night, so snapping the losing streak. So well done for the Leander Lions there.
Was that the year Pflugerville went to the state quarterfinals or semifinals? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really good, really good team. So there it is, our Whataburger top five.
Alex Okafor was on that.
Yes, he was. And we will, tomorrow we'll have our Double Meat with Cheese edition, the top 10 state rankings. All right, time now for our weekly conversation with Mike Roach from Horns 24/7 there, who covers the recruiting scene so very well. Mike, who works as hard as anybody we know, and yet I just get the feeling, Mike, you'll be setting aside the keyboard this afternoon to take in your beloved Buffalo Bills with that rare 4 o'clock kickoff today against the Chiefs.
It's likely I'll be watching with the keyboard on my lap.
it is, after all, that time of year where you're having to stay on top of everything. I always ask you to start us off with the feedback from the weekend, the recruits that you hear from, the ones you contact, their vibe that you get coming off, even on what for Texas was an open date weekend, but they're noticing what else is going on as well. How about the feedback you got from the guys that you visited with over the weekend?
It's a little bit more of the same we talked about last week. I think for Texas, it's they really need to get back on the field and get a win. They haven't had a win in almost a month, and in recruiting time, that's like years. So it's much needed at this point. I think I described it this morning in the Stampede as less being in neutral and a little more being dead in the water at this point. It's just it's not a lot good to report still.
Yeah, Mike, let's talk about the Stampede a little bit. And in one position that I want to focus on is running back. And you mentioned that position, the staff, feels good based on, your conversation with sources about Jonathan Brooks. But where are things at with LJ Johnson right now? In a recruitment like that, if Texas can win that recruitment, how much could that help just salvage this class with, the recent decommitment of Billy Bowman and things look like they're going south? How much could winning a big recruitment like LJ Johnson really kind of get things headed in the right direction?
It would be huge, but I think to do it, we're going to have to see some things turn around on the field. I think that Texas entered the fall really in the pole position with the understanding that, if they had the type of season that many expected them to have, and just kept pushing the right buttons for LJ that they would have him at the end of it. And now everything's kind of gone. The wheels have shut off this thing, and all bets are off really at this point. I think that talking to sources around LJ, it's not like he's going to make a quick decision, but he's obviously looking at his top two schools in Texas and Texas A&M, and one is spiraling while the other's, a top 10 team and is running the ball pretty well. So, I think right now A&M is probably wrestling some of that momentum back their way. And, like I said, Texas needs a win. They need the answer for all these losses and mistakes. They need to get back and look impressive.
Yeah, Mike, that's kind of where I was going next. On top of the issues Texas is having right now, Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley, they're not going anywhere. When you talk about programs Texas has to recruit against in the region, are you hearing more positive, especially coming off the win over Florida? They go to Mississippi State and get a win. Are you hearing more buzz, positive buzz, for recruits toward Texas A&M than maybe you have in the last few weeks or months?
Not a lot more, but I think some people are taking notice that, they did beat a top-ranked Florida team, and then, you know, beat a bad Mississippi State team, but still a win nonetheless. I think that at this point in time, Texas fans aren't really in position to say what's a good or a bad win. I think any win is good, especially in this Corona season. I think any win is really good. So I haven't heard an overwhelming amount of buzz, but, you know, like we said, it definitely helps. And, you know, you keep stacking those wins, and all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself at the end of the year with a lot of wins that you can sell to that group of recruits. So, you know, I think that for A&M, they're obviously trending up right now while Texas is trending down.
Mike Roach, recruiting editor of Horns 24/7, joining us here on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Mike, I know we've kind of touched on this before, but given the current climate of circumstances, I wanted to get a little more clarification. When I've asked you in the past, or when folks have asked you about, you know, how much does one win make a difference one way or another, and I remember the mentor in balls for you and Jeff, Bobby Burton, used to tell me that, you know, very, very few games in and of themselves, a single game can swing it. Maybe a Texas OU game on occasion. I know you also said that some of the guys you contact in the past have said they weren't even watching a given game on a weekend, that sort of thing as well. But it's a cumulative effect, isn't it, what you're talking about? Like you said, the calendar would show that when Texas takes on Baylor this Saturday, will be almost a month to the day since their last win, the Texas Tech game, which was on the 26th of September. And that you said that, you know, that's forever in the recruiting cycle as well. So do they look at it more from the cumulative perspective than on a given Saturday?
I think at this point in time, if you're a recruit and, you know, you tune in to watch Texas play TCU and they lose in the way they do, and then you say, okay, well, maybe that's just one. Let's come back for the Oklahoma game. You tune in to watch the Oklahoma game, and then the national narrative is what it is on Texas, and there's instability and there's coaching change talk and there's a month between wins. I mean, I think that it adds up. It's more of a cumulative thing than a week-to-week thing. But, you know, the bye weeks, I think, play a lot into this. It's we've had a lot of weird bye weeks this year, and I think Texas really needed to be on the field this past weekend more than anything for recruiting perception, because it's another week that all that talk happens on a national level, and their coaches and their parents and kids hear it. And Texas isn't able to answer it. So, yeah, I think it is cumulative. But, you know, when you talk about a month of just, you know, think about a month of somebody in your ear saying only negative things about a team, it starts to feel like a lot to a kid.
So if I'm understanding you correctly here, Mike, what you're also saying is, let's just say Baylor, even though all signs are trending toward them being able to play on Saturday, but let's just say for a moment that they had another outbreak or whatever and a spike and couldn't play the game, and they had to push the Baylor game back a month in November. That would be another week off for Texas. You're saying that would be detrimental in the recruiting cycle, not only because they didn't win a game, but because they didn't play a game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at this point, like I said, it's all about answering. And you know, you're only as good as really your last performance. So what's the last taste Texas left in everyone's mouth was the Oklahoma game and the TCU game. And so not getting to answer, not getting their chance at that is as detrimental as anything.
Mike, let me ask you this. We talked about LJ Johnson, and you could talk about, you know, the two offensive line prospects, the two big ones left on the board with Savion Bird and Bryce Foster, who I think we can all agree Texas is behind with. But regardless of the circumstances, give me one recruitment that you think Texas has to win where this staff can feel like, okay, we at least got that one in the books.
I would say Terrence Cooks, the linebacker out of Shadow Creek, who, I mean, if you'd asked me in February, I'd have bet my house on him being a Longhorn. You know, if you'd asked me a month ago, I'd have bet my house on him being a Longhorn. But obviously, you know, he's one that the things are starting to change there as well. I've heard he recently reached out to the Oklahoma staff to see what their room looks like and how much room they had in the class. And that was one that Texas has had in the bag for quite some time almost, and now it's starting to get away. So they've got to go win recruitments like that where they had natural advantages. And you know, as of right now, it's looking rough. There's not a lot of recruitments I can look at and say I feel really good about them winning.
Okay, Mike, that's going to bring about the next obvious follow-up, Jatavion Sanders.
Everything still sounds good with Jatavion Sanders. I think that Texas is very blessed that Jatavion does not like the recruiting process and is not willing to wade into it again and deal with all the contact. I think that Jatavion feels at home as of right now. Everything is subject to change, but as of right now, I'm still hearing a lot of positive things with Jatavion Sanders in Texas.
Okay. Mike Roach, follow his outstanding work there, Horns 24/7, and subscribe and get involved and check him out on the Stampede. Always entertaining work and informative. Mike, as always, thank you, and best of luck to the Bills. Hey, do we know, are they wearing the old school throwback helmets there with, as our old friend and colleague and lifetime Bills fan A.J. Hoffman used to say, the standing grazing buffalo as opposed to the leaping buffalo? Because I like the old school AFL look.
Yeah, they should be in those tonight, I would think. We're holding out a good thought. It's been a rough 2 weeks of the schedule getting the Titans and Chiefs back-to-back, but hey, if we want to prove we're good, we got to beat those teams.
So. There you go. All right. Mike, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Mike Roach, Horns 24/7. And obviously our conversations with our guest brought to you when we're talking football and Longhorn football, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Door. Check them out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com.
Box of fluffy ducks on the recruiting trail right now, Craig.
I'll tell you what we can do. Can we have a breaking news sounder here? We have a little breaking news. In case you didn't hear, we have a kickoff time for the Halloween game in Stillwater.
What a random time that is.
Texas and Oklahoma State, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 p.m. Whenever you have a random time like that, the answer is always Fox.
Yeah.
The answer is always Fox. You know, ESPN is their 11 a.m., 2:30, you know, 6 or 7, that kind of. Fox is all over the road sometimes with their things, and that's what it is because it's going to be a Fox telecast. So Halloween afternoon in Stillwater.
The only note I would add here, Craig, since we do talk all things on the gridiron at the bottom of the hour, is we're under the impression right now that this game is going to be played on Saturday. As we sit here right now, real time, we're under the impression Texas and Baylor are playing on Saturday. I was surprised at the line, and maybe this is more Baylor COVID issues than Texas on the field. According to the William Hill Sportsbook, the line for this game opened at Texas favored by 10.5.
So I heard someone mention that. Maybe Bucky and Aaron were talking about
that. Now, it's since come down to 10, but I'll throw out just one of those facts that I always bring up, some of these arbitrary numbers I like throwing out that I love so much. Tom Herman in Big 12 play in his tenure at Texas, when favored by 6 or more points, is only 4-9-1 against the spread with 2 outright losses, one of those losses being back on October 3rd at TCU. So if you're into the FIBO lines right now, according to William Hill, I'm looking at it, it's Texas favored by 10.
Okay.
I think a lot of that, though, Craig, I don't know what to think of Baylor right now. They played 2 games.
It's hard to tell.
One was against Kansas, so you almost have to just throw out that film. They lost an overtime game on the road against West Virginia, who, you know me, Craig, I've talked to West Virginia since going back like pre-COVID. I thought Neil Brown was going to have a pretty solid team. So I just don't know. As Tom Herman and that staff start breaking down that film, I don't know what they're going to make of Baylor because I have no idea what to make of Baylor just looking at it from the outside in right now.
We'll have John Morris on this week to talk about the Bears a little more and find out a little more about them as well. All right, coming up next, we'll have our inconceivable moment. We'll continue here with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app at hornfm.com.
Bucky and Aaron.
October 1st, game 3 of the...
Inconceivable! 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 Inconceivable!
Look at you in the Horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
You know what it means to one Dodger fan who texted in on the Specs text line? Said, lifetime Dodger fan since Fernando Mania. I hate to say this, Craig. I hope they don't pitch Clayton Kershaw in game 1. Here's my response to that. Who are you going to pitch? I don't think they have a choice. I would have said Urias had they not needed him, and boy, did they need him last night, and he was brilliant. 9 up, 9 down to finish off the Braves. Got to do what you have to do to get to the deal. Dustin May started last night and wasn't ready, wasn't up to it. Tony Gonsolin came in, wasn't ready to go. Walker Buehler just pitched Saturday. who you gonna go? You know, I know you could say bullpen game, but you have to have an opener, as Tampa Bay likes to call it. I think it's going to be Clayton Kershaw. And he's going on 4 days rest. Pitched Thursday. So I know during most of the year he went on 5 days rest. He'll go on four, but it's not like three or, you know, heaven forbid, two. So,
all I know is Caleb Ferguson's not available, Craig.
See?
And that's a damn shame.
That would have been the answer to it. Meanwhile, as we go into other items, how about this? 12-year-old boy out walking around with the dad. They were hiking. And this was in Canada, in the Horseshoe Canyon area, in the badlands of Alberta, Canada. Walking around, hiking. He goes, "Hey, Dad, what's this over here?" He found a partially unearthed dinosaur fossil. And he's a seventh grader in Calgary. The fossil was a humerus bone from the arm of a juvenile hadrosaur. That's that one of those duck-billed dinosaurs that lived about 69 million years ago. Yeah. He found a...
found it in Canada, eh?
In Canada. Hey, 12-year-old, 69-million-year-old fossil there for
you. What a dinosaur bone is worth on the collector's market.
That's a good question here. Couple of animal creature stories. You like
it's
it?
Weird. That's where my mind immediately goes.
Yeah. What does it bring on the market these days? It's a good question.
I think I just watch too much Pawn Stars. I think that's where my mind immediately goes to the value.
True enough. You watch Shark Week too when it comes on, don't you?
I'm not a big Shark Week guy, Craig.
But you like shark stories.
Oh, I do. I do enjoy a good shark story. Yeah, because I mean, have you ever heard a shark story that was boring? Always ends up with somebody getting bit or some animal in danger or something going.
Well, here's something to go with it. Sharks have killed seven people in where else? Australia, right? This year. That's the most since 1934. Why? Well, those two words for you. Climate change. Could be climate change, is what they're saying now. There were no shark attack deaths in Australia at all last year. The years before that saw only one or two annually. The last time the country had seven shark attack deaths a year was 1934. And they're all on that East Coast, and so they believe with 21 shark incidents this year. Number of possible explanations. Several experts have pointed out that year-by-year figures always fluctuate, and it could be simply bad luck. But there's another possible culprit. The climate crisis. As the oceans are heating up, the entire ecosystems are being destroyed and forced to adapt. Fish are migrating where they've never gone before, so it's driving the sharks closer to shore, at least in Australia. So, global warming? Maybe. Who knows? But sharks apparently hanging out even more so than normal.
Maybe as Bobby Boucher once told us, Craig, like the alligator, maybe sharks are ornery because they got all them teeth and no toothbrush.
Well, there you go. That would.
What do you think, Snoop?
That was a brilliantly placed and timed movie reference.
Thank you, sir.
And you know what? When Jaws was out, I could not have been more scared of sharks, even though I didn't step within like 10 yards of water as a child.
See, I don't know, man. Sharks have always been, in terms of the fear factor, it's always been kind of out of sight, out of mind with me. I didn't grow up near the coast, so Craig, I can see how you could be fearful of the. Of a shark?
Well, I've not been that fearful of them because they're kind of rare to happen in the southeastern United States. You know, Jaws itself is set Massachusetts, you know, New England coast there. So it's rare to have them. They have had some, but it's rare that you have those kind of things happen. Another thing that I wanted to get to. We've all tried to adjust with the things going on with the pandemic. One of the things we've not done, tell me if either of you guys have done this in a while, been to a movie. Have you been to a theater?
No.
Have you been to a movie theater?
Negative.
Neither have I.
No, it's, pre-COVID, I can't even tell you the last time I went to the movies. I'm usually big like in the Alamo Draft House, that kind of setup. If I'm going to a movie, that's where it's gonna be.
AMC Theaters may have the answer for you. You can rent out your own private AMC movie theater for $99. That's right. According to the website, they allow rental up to 20 people. Starts at $99, including tax, and increases up to $349 depending on the movie. It also depends on the theater's location and any other add-ons like food and drink. You could list renting a microphone to greet guests if you want that, $100. While more time to enter the auditorium beyond the standard 15 minutes costs another $250. In other words, the starting price is $99. Kind of goes up from there. But a crisp Ben Franklin can get you your own private AMC movie theater.
This is like the airline that offers cheap tickets, and they're like, oh yeah, it's $99 round trip, but
$50 to your bag.
We charge you $100, $125 per bag, and then actually, then once you get the second bag, then it's another $250 or whatever.
That's true. Now, if you could rent out a movie and show to 20 of your friends, what movie would you show?
What, like, are studios even releasing movies right now?
I don't think so.
No, they're like going straight to...
Yeah, on demand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you could show any movie...
Ooh, that's a good question.
You got a theater.
Look, if I've got the big screen, I've got the sound system and everything going with it, we're watching something like some Fast and the Furious movie or a superhero movie. I want stuff where there's going to be a lot of explosions, a lot of stuff getting blown up.
Okay.
With maybe some fighting going on.
I got mine.
Yeah.
It's a Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay, so there you go. All right. Final thing here. We gave you one animal story, at least in terms of a shark. You guys know what a lemur is.